And welcome to Agency Phonics. I'm live today with Leon Mills from We Are Adam. And I'm going to be coming over to him in a minute. But first of all, a couple of thank yous, as always. I want to say thank you to our sponsor, Forecast. They very kindly sponsor our social enterprise, not-for-profit Agency Nomics and Agency Phonics, and also Wartehive, because they provide us with all the studio equipment to do the podcast live. Leon, we're not live today, unfortunately, but then you haven't had to come down to Manchester to Farnborough. But Caitlin, our wonderful producer, is in the studio today, so thank you to her as well. Leon. I always want to call you Leon, but there's a little acute accent on your name in the middle, so it's Leon.
There is, yes. I am purporting to be French, Spencer, but I'm not French. I was born near Rochdale, so definitely not French.
But probably, yeah, definitely nowhere near France. So can you tell us a bit about We Are Adam?
Yeah, so I'm the co-founder of a business called We Are Adam. My business partner and I, Richard, we launched a business, feels like decades ago now, but it was, 14 years ago. And in essence, what we do is help ambitious businesses find great people across marketing, digital, tech, and human resources. And we're well equipped to help businesses of all shapes and sizes, ranging from startups, scale-up businesses, SME businesses, all the way up to PLC businesses. But we're far more than just a recruitment business, and we provide clients with a lot more than just a CV or a candidate or make a placement with them. And I'd like to say that we very much position ourselves as strategic talent partners to our clients, whereas on the one hand, we very much offer valuable search, selection, headhunting services, like the traditional recruitment model. But on the second hand, we've also developed a dedicated consultancy arm to our business, where we offer advice and insights to businesses to ensure they get the very best out of their employee journey. And what we do is share data which shows the true cost of getting their talent strategy wrong. And the areas that we look at and the costs that we look at and scrutinize with them involve poor hiring, lack of or even poor onboarding, or even no onboarding, lack of training, lost productivity, management time, all that kind of good stuff. And what we do from that consultancy perspective is advise on how they can improve all aspects and save time, unnecessary cost, and obviously that puts money back on the bottom line. But this then enables them to focus on what they love doing and achieve their growth strategy and very much maximize the efficiency of the people that work within their business.
And so do you, when you work with agencies, do you work with certain types of roles, or do you work with all roles in a business, in an agency business?
Yeah, so I'll say where our strength is, or where our sweet spot of helping agencies find talent very much is the client services pillar is a massive one. I like to weave project management within to that, because the skill sets do weave it together. So client services, project management, new business stroke commercial, strategy, planning, innovation. I mean, that's a massive new burgeoning part to agencies. The tech side to agencies, and very much the HR arm as well, finding HR professionals to help for businesses, agencies.
Amazing. So I want to share with you a little story, which I did share with you when we met a good few years ago. We met in Kew on the Kew Road. You remember? We had a couple outside, and I did share. How long ago was that?
For about 3 years ago. We sat outside a lovely restaurant and had lunch, didn't we?
Yeah, it was nice. And and I remember sharing with you the story that day, which I don't really tell many people. But when I first set up Blue Halo, we were about I guess we were kind of probably about 1.5 million turnover, about 20-25 staff, and we recruited the role you just said, the head of HR, the head of people role, really, because, it was getting really, it's hard, the time it takes to be able to recruit people and also do all the other things, which I want to cover with you in a moment. But the key thing was, I thought I'd be really clever and then take that person and set up and I know you're not a classic recruitment because you do add value, but I want to talk about that in particular in a minute, because I think really everyone should really understand that properly, what the value brings to an agency.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd be clever. I thought I'd set up a recruitment business, because I was like, these guys, they get big percentage fees. So we took the person and we set up a recruitment business for people working digital. Because if you remember, maybe back in 2006-07, actually most people weren't really recruiting for digital. They were recruiting the old-fashioned tech businesses. Anyway, set the business up and it was a complete disaster. I thought, you know, percentage commission, place loads of candidates, make loads of money. It's money for old rope, isn't it? But it was just one of the toughest businesses that, I mean, and we just couldn't make it work at all. And so I actually have a lot of respect. And I told you that when I first met you, because I think anyone who can build and scale a business in your area, it's not easy. Everyone thinks it's easy, but it's not, right? You know, because, you know, for every candidate you find, they then take a job with somebody else or, you know, there's all these things that can go wrong.
I must have done something heinous in my former life to have had a career of 20 years in recruitment, Spencer. I just don't know what it was. But yeah, no, it's there's a lot of craft that goes into not science, but craft, energy, effort, legwork to not only identify but engage with, then present quality shortlists of talent to prospective clients. And as you say, there's so many hurdles that you have to go through, so many potential banana skins, candidates being offered multiple different roles or going through the motions. You've managed a process brilliantly well and they go and accept an offer, then go and resign. And then the incumbent, their incumbent employer then counter offers with an extra 2-3K more than the other business has offered. And then you're back to square one and all that time invested has yielded absolutely nothing. So, yeah, I mean, I love the business that I'm in. I love people. I love meeting people. I love discovering about businesses. I love learning about what makes one business tick and what their vision is and strategy and how they become successful. And I love then being that raconteur in the marketplace and going identifying the future generations of talent to introduce to these businesses to make sure they continue on their growth strategy.
Yeah, and so that's the thing though. Is like I think once it failed, I then used a lot more recruitment agencies. I mean, I had before, but I'd noticed that most recruiters were just bunging in CVs and actually they made more work for me, not less. But I found a really good one. And obviously the experience of trying to do it ourselves, I realized that actually a good recruitment business, and I don't want to label you recruitment because I know you're much more than that, but it does add massive value. You know, they work with you to understand the values that you have to help you find the right candidate, right? And I think that's a misconception. They just think, oh, you charge lots of money and the fees are there, because I think probably many businesses do just, you know, take the fees and send loads of candidates in. But really, you know, you mentioned on your intro, you add loads of value. Can you tell us a bit about that? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. So I think, yeah, you mentioned that there are the other recruiters that just do firing CVs and do that. I mean, there is a marketplace out there for recruiters that work on high volume, low margin. That is not the kind of ecosystem that we work in. We work as extensions to your team, for instance, or to a client's team. So in order to get the very best out of us as a recruitment partner or a talent partner, we need to learn about your business. We need to know exactly what makes your business tick. We need to learn about your idiosyncrasies. We need to learn about your culture. We need to learn about, you name it, everything about your business. So that we can then be the, as I said, the contours in the marketplace and identify the unique hidden talent in the marketplace that might well then want to come and work for your business. So there's a lot of legwork that goes on behind the scenes. There's a lot of research into the marketplace. And then there's the amount of Zoom calls or face-to-face calls that we have with, you know, pre-COVID that we have with potential talent, vet them against prerequisite skills, to vet them against cultural fit, attitudinal fit, growth mindset fit, all that kind of good stuff. So it's not a question of you calling me and saying, right, Leon, can you find me an account manager? Who have you got on your books? Yes, that happened 20 years ago, and that was great. That's when it was the halcyon years, Spencer, and it was money for old rope. Hold my hands up. You know, I was literally, when I worked for the PLC I used to work for, shelling peas. But it just became transaction left, right, and center, as opposed to really, really immersing myself in the business. I can't remember where I was going with that thread, actually. So yeah,
it's like, you know, it's true, because I think, you know, if you do recruit yourself, this is one of the debates whenever I talk to an agency owner and they say, oh yeah, but recruitment's really expensive. But I'm often saying, how much time are you spending sorting through candidates, trying to, you know, the process? And I think if you can work with a partner who can take some of that load off you and then not waste your time by sending you in, you know, just like loads of CVs that are going to keep you really busy, but actually get you quality. But also, are you still there, by the way, because you're frozen on my screen?
Yeah, it's fine.
The other thing is if you want more diversity in your team, then at least you, when like you go to a recruiter can go out and you're not just relying on the inbounds, right? You can go out, as you said earlier on, you can headhunt people, can't you? So people in jobs are probably sometimes more, you know, lucrative than people have been made with, you know, who've lost their jobs potentially. You've got, you know, the ability to to hopefully add more diversity to the range of candidates that they're seeing as well, rather than just literally getting in what you're getting in inbound. So I think people don't really understand that. Do you find that as a problem as well?
Yeah, very much so. And
it's like an education piece, isn't it, really?
And to go back to your original comment about people saying that we're really expensive, and I say, well, compared to what? You know, what are we expensive compared to? You know, let's look at agency example. You know, you provide a great service to client side businesses in terms of what they need to achieve. And without great talented people are our greatest asset. How are they actually going to deliver that? But as you say, we're looking at the whole diversity piece. Yeah, we can take a brief from a client and they can give us a whole smorgasbord of exactly what they're looking for. And we can go and identify that, as you say, take them out of that natural sort of short corridor of people that might well come to them. And we can go and search for these people. And as you say, it enriches the culture and the diversity of any particular business that we're helping grow. But what I was trying, I was thinking earlier, I knew you were going to ask me about the sort of the value, et cetera, and trying to do a quick job and that sort of thing. And I was thinking to myself that it's very similar to an agency who doesn't have an internal business development function that will engage with, for instance, a lead generation agency or a new business agency. There's some great ones out there, and I've heard about some stinkers that are out there. But I think if I was an agency owner, think about how much time they have invested into that relationship with that lead generation business to ensure that that business goes and makes sure they harvest the very best opportunities to present them to, so they can really invest their time into making sure that they can win those accounts. You're not just going to call up your lead development agency, what leads have you got? Whereas when they call up recruiters and say, what candidates have you got in your database? It's exactly the same as that kind of analogy.
Yeah, we've got some questions coming through in the chat, which is going to be great. So I'll throw those to you in a little bit. I don't know if you've seen, but there's a few of us that go to South by Southwest most years, and we go there to kind of just, you know, get a bit of a different perspective on technology and where things are going and get a bit of time away from the UK.
Yeah.
And Pete and I went about, I think it was about 2 years ago, just after the Oscars were getting, you know, really attacked, right, because of their lack of diversity with people who won Oscars. And JJ Abrahams, he's the guy who did the Star Wars movies for Disney. He was hosting one of the panels, and someone asked him that question, you know, what are you doing to, you know, to change this storyline? And actually he said, I'm now not just getting my agents or whatever they were called, the people that go out scouts and find potential actors for the movies. He said, I've instructed everybody out there to get me I want to see as many people from many cultures and backgrounds and age and everything. Like he was really big on getting a wider pool of candidates so he could make a better choice.
Yeah. You know?
And I really like that. And I sort of took it away and I've been trying to encourage my agencies the ones I work with a lot, to try and do that, because I think sometimes it is just the same, you know, people applying for the jobs and you don't really, you know. So I think that, are you finding that that's a demand or not? Is that
there's been a massive trend over the past definitely couple of years where part of the brief is we want a diverse shortlist, and it's great to see. I love seeing that.
Me too. And so. So the other thing is, would you think now, because I know you've written this amazing piece of thought leadership, which we're going to talk about a little bit, the future of work report, but I'll talk more about that in a minute. But do you think now because of this kind of people not working so much in centralized regions and offices and maybe more distributed now, do you think that's going to help people get more diversity from like the shires, I call them, you know, like the home counties and those areas that, you know, that maybe don't have the diversity, they could now attract them, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, the talent pools have just been thrown totally open book now, hasn't it? Because we don't all need to be in our offices 9 to 5 in wherever it might well be, central London or Timbuktu. You can work from absolutely anywhere and be just as productive. So yeah, I see it as the floodgates opening really on bags more talented people who wouldn't have had the opportunity to work in these great businesses having these opportunities now. So yeah, it's great.
When I spoke to Daniel Priestley, do you know Daniel Priestley, the guy that wrote?
Yeah, I watched your podcast with him recently.
Yeah, do you remember he mentioned about the time zones now, and he said he believed that. Have you seen any evidence where, you know, for example, I mean, I guess South Africa's in our time zone, where maybe, you know, there you might help agencies in the UK find talent from, you know, a particular time zone.
So people that some agencies that I'm working with now actually are happy to hire people who are in the European time zones, which is great. I mean, it makes our job slightly more difficult because it means we're not only headhunting for a business based out of London or Manchester, but the whole of Central Europe. So it's,
But that's got to be quite exciting, hasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. But obviously, yeah, if you've got a small niche area that you can look at, that you can really pinpoint the talent in that. But if it's harder, if it's wider. But yeah, no, it's far more exciting. For me, you're getting to speak to a lot more culturally diverse people as well. So you discover more about them, about working practices, cultures, that kind of stuff. So it's a win-win.
Amazing. I love that. It's really good. So one of the things, in fact, I'm just going to quickly pick up this question because it could be relevant. Yeah. We are Purple Dog. Question for Leon. Are you focusing on senior roles or can you provide juniors as well? And diversity question, are very attached to the diversity of our current team, but it's not easy to keep that balance. Any recommendations where to look and find diverse profiles? So first of all, do you do junior roles or just senior roles?
Yeah, we do. But I'll be dead honest. It's easier to find more junior profiles at the moment. There's obviously a lot more people who are on the market at the moment, and a lot more junior people for some reason on the marketplace. So, if you really are struggling, I'd be very keen to have a conversation with you. But I would advise first and foremost trying your own outreach methods because it might well save you money. As I say, the more senior briefs are all headhunting because the best senior people are still in roles, invested in roles and doing very well.
I think the question is actually saying, can you provide juniors?
So I said, yes, I can provide juniors, but I would suggest to the individual to try and get them first. If they can't, please do come to. I'm not turning away business. I would suggest go first via your own channels because there's so many more junior people on the marketplace at the moment.
I see. So we talked about that just before we started the show. So there's a bit of an abundance model with talent attraction, right? You know, sometimes resources or talent is scarce, and you're saying basically juniors are in abundance right now, yeah?
Yeah, very much so.
So you're focusing more on trying to help people solve the difficult areas.
Yeah, more strategic hires where we can add value, where there will be demonstrable ROI in terms of what, you know, the money that's invested into our service, basically.
The other question was how do you get more diversity into your team in terms of recruitment? I guess not just the method I said, but like, is there any other tips that you would give people on how to attract more diverse candidates?
I think this goes to this. I mean, this. I think this is all feeds into individual businesses' talent attraction strategies and what are we doing above and beyond just having a very insipid jobs page of come and work for us. You know, what are we doing to bring our businesses to life now? You know, we've got a unique opportunity with all the online content marketing strategies that we can execute, all the videos that we can execute to really share, disseminate to a wider audience about how diverse our businesses are. I know that sounds like it might be quite a generic, but
I think you're totally right. I just actually, I think, you know, I was going to ask you, funnily enough, what advice, like, you've obviously worked on the other side. I bet if you ran an agency, you'd know all the things that you would do right from the beginning, correct? When it comes to talent attraction.
Yeah. I'd like to think so.
So what would you, like, what is your kind of, like, if you were running, it's a good question, this, what if you were running an agency, how would you build the best, you know, talent attraction? What would you do to make it, you know,
so to first,
want to work for you, I guess.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I think from a strategy perspective, always be hiring. Yeah. I think the analogy I draw is that your talent pipeline is exactly the same as your sales pipeline. Your sales pipeline is always running. You've always got an eye out for new business. In the same breath, we should always be on the lookout for new talent. So that treadmill of talent should be just coming through and coming through and coming through, so that as and when you do have an opportunity, you've got three or four people to choose from, and you can pick up the phone and say, right, now we do have that opportunity within our business. So that those gentle conversations, nurturing, seducing, what kind of parlance you want to use, always be doing that. Prospective talent, like they are a prospective new client. That's the kind of mindset I think we all need to adopt and treat this as a long-term kind of model, not a short-term, shit, I've got a vacancy, I need to get a bum on a seat ASAP type thing, because that's when we all make errors. I was taught years ago, the whole idea of hiring slowly and firing fast. Make sure that you go through the whole motions of vetting people, introduce as many people as you can to them in the business, and also give ownership to the process to the people within your business to make sure that every stone has been unturned.
You know, I love that. It, you know, and it took me many years to learn that actually, you know, creating a proper recruitment process is really, really key. Like I read recently, I think it was Amazon, who do something like 7 interviews now before you get the job. But actually, I think everybody should really define those stages, whether, you know, it starts off with a 15-minute vetting call, and it maybe moves on to where you check the values. Are they a good culture fit, through to, do they have the skills fit? Can you get the best people in your team who represent your values to talk to them, meet them, to make sure that they feel like they're someone who would, you know, who would fit in, you know, from a culture perspective. And then
I've made some stinking errors over the years. You know, like probably all of us have made some stinkers. And
because you rushed too quickly, didn't take.
Yeah, you rushed too quickly. But you know, the last year, 18 months, we've, as I say, given the final phase stage ownership to the guys that work in the business. And a great tip or piece of advice is just take the person you're looking to offer, two or three of you, take the candidate out for a beer or two, and that then disarms them. And yeah, we had it the last time we were trying to hire someone. Well, and we could go to a pub whenever that was. The guys came out the next day and said, "No,
Manchester."
Yeah, exactly. They were like, "Absolute red flag. This chap is an absolute nutter. He will not fit in." So those couple of beers totally disarmed the veil, the facade that you have for an interview. Totally came out and said that person is not going to fit with our culture. He will be a cultural terrorist and will totally disarm that, totally disrupt the kind of culture that we've been working so hard to achieve over the years.
Yeah, I'm bouncing back to that diversity question. I think, you know, yes, you can help yourself by getting more people on the list, but also I think if your website, you were touching on this, I think your website has to be, you know, it has to be friendly, right? It has to sort of, you know, try to communicate in a way that appeals to all. So, I mean, I remember working with one agency, and they were just fed up with having male programmers, you know, all the time. They wanted to have, you know, a better diverse mix of having female programmers in as well as male. But they actually asked a female programmer to look at their job descriptions, and she said, "I would never apply to work for you." And so they went back and they worked with her to rewrite it in a way that she would have applied for the job, which was basically, there was some subtle, it was very clever, but I think it was a good move. But I think getting some outside help on maybe the way you communicate to, do you use the term ABR, always be recruiting? You sort of said.
Yeah.
So there's a quite a funny story that when Peter, you know Peter Hall, don't you?
Yeah, Yeah, very well.
So very well, yeah. So when Peter first joined Blue Halo, we were probably about, I don't know, maybe we were just under a million turnover. And he was like, why are you interviewing every night? He said, we don't have any vacancies. And I said, but we will do soon, you know. And I think, and then when the sales came in, we had a list of candidates. And it was sometimes quite hard because you've almost got to meet people and understand them. And you don't always have a job to offer them, right? But you get to say, look, we're always looking for good talents. But the thing that was really, really key from all of that was that there was a story that, you know, because in an agency, Leon, you have to recruit behind the sales curve. You can't take people on and then go and find sales, right? You don't have people waiting around because it is our only asset. It's the main cost in the business. And I remember getting told a story by a friend of mine who was at AKQA in Berlin. And he said that he won the BMW account and it was £10 million piece of business. And he had to recruit 100 people in a quarter. So I always remind people, you know, so if you've got to find 100 people in a quarter, it won't, you know, looking for in the background all the time for candidates, you know, because you will never have to have that problem, right? I lost you. We're having internet problems. Leon, are you there? I've lost him as well. Speed test. Am I live still, Caitlin? Okay. Well, until Leon joins us, let's keep the conversation going. I'm going to seem a bit weird now talking to myself. So I think there's been some valuable lessons there, by the way. You know, make sure your website says work for us, put the roles on, but also don't be afraid to, just make it open for people always to come and talk to you. You know, even if you don't have a role right now, have a conversation with individuals, find out where they want to go in their career, what's important to them, what clients would they like to work on, what type of work would they want to do. There's quite a famous story I heard about social media agency that grew very, very quickly. And the CEO spent most of his time actually meeting all the talent he could in the space because he knew one day he would need to recruit them. So I think it's that ABR strategy. We do talk about it in the Agencynomics book. And by the way, I just want to explain why I'm wearing this cap today, because I've got lockdown 2 hair. Hair appointment is on Saturday. And so I'm sort of gone for the whole, you know, hermit look today. I'm sorry about that. So, So I think that, you know, get the website, always be looking, even when you're not looking, because you never know when someone's going to leave. And how many of us actually, you know, always end up probably rushing the recruitment, and that can lead to a lot of problems. The other thing I wanted to just say was that I've noticed another trend as well, which is that a lot of owners have become, we talked about this a lot recently, built their personal brand online and they've become more high profile. If you become more high profile as an individual, as a leader in your business, you will attract more talent to come and work for you. But if you don't, then, you know, if you want to get more people coming to work for you, then you have to raise your profile, not just the agency, but you personally as well. So wonder where Leon is. Is he rebooting his internet? Oh.
I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Do you have a power cut?
Sorry. Sorry about that. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I was talking to myself.
Are you doing a monologue?
I did do a monologue.
I do apologize. Let's go get back in the game.
Yes, get back again. So I just said to everyone, you know, if I, you know, for me, it's getting the website, your own website, saying you're always recruiting.
Yeah.
Always looking for talented people. Obviously put specific roles up as well. But yeah, maybe look at the language that you write. Make sure you are approachable. Make sure your team pictures don't look like no one's going to want to work for you, you know?
Yeah, I think, it's a classic case of cobbler's shoes, isn't it? I don't think any of us do enough on our own website. And that is the virtual shop window that really can make the difference. Like, as you say, yeah, get the pictures right, get them updated, get everyone involved to show how diverse you are and culturally enriched you are.
Get
every person within the business to think about the kind of content that you want to be sharing on the website. Then it will be universally appealing and not just the kind of vernacular that comes from business owners that, as we all know, we can be a little bit boring and monotonous and lack of diversification on that front. And,
you know, I guess with the changing landscape as well, it's important that if you have changed the way you work to be more flexible, like flexibility first or remote working, whatever that is, get it on the website and tell people, because, you know, people will be looking for those working practices.
Yeah.
Over, you know, some people might want an office job. Some people might want to work remotely, but, you know, make it clear that they can have those choices, right?
Exactly. I think in this day and age now, it's so important to really shout from the rooftops about every great aspect of your business.
You know, when you were off, that's what I said, if you build your because I have someone I'm working with at the moment, and their personal brand, they're shying away from it. And I was trying to make the point that the more you raise your personal profile, the more people come and want to work for you. So it's part of that, you know, talent attraction. It's not just about new business or about, yeah, you know, building a famous agency. It is actually about talent attraction too.
Yeah, I call it talent magnetism. You want people queuing up outside your front door. I was doing a podcast a while ago, probably 12 to 18 months ago, just when, am I allowed to mention agencies and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, yeah, whatever you want.
Johnny Twos and Tom and the guys at the lab introduced their four-day week. I know that lots of other agencies now have the four-day week, but I reached out and said, that is genius, guys. You know, you are going to be oversubscribed. That is the kind of USP that no other agency is doing and adopting. So fair play to you. And, you know, that now is obviously quite commonplace, but they were very much ahead of the curve when they did it. So fair play to them.
Yeah. I think, you know, innovating recruitment practices. I've got a client that's, you know, really increasing up their holiday to be well beyond anything of the competitors. You've seen obviously things like Unlimited Holiday. The guys at Redico do that, a search agency. And so there's lots of good examples, I think, actually, of the benefits. If you do something innovative, how you can PR yourself for it as well. And look, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot of people are a bit cynical and go, oh, yeah, it's a good PR stunt. But, you know, maybe that's part of the life. You know, you have to do a little bit of PR to raise your profile, right?
Very much so. Yeah, now I'm all in favour of it.
So if you know, someone is looking to work with you, how do they get the best out of a recruitment agency? What advice would you give them?
Okay. So I think first and foremost, you need to invest time into the relationship. As you would do with your accountant or any legal partner, we need to get to know you. I mean, that's the whole point of why we called ourselves Adam, you know, get to know us from Adam. And the more that we can immerse ourselves and learn about your business at the start of that partnership, the better job we're going to be able to do, because we will, yeah, we'll be committed to you, and we'll know it. We'll know every nuance about your business. We'll know what makes you tick. We'll know about your culture. We'll know about your milestones. We'll know about your challenges, how you overcame them. We'll know about your idiosyncratic culture, all that kind of good stuff. And I think where lots of businesses go wrong with recruiters is chucking a brief out willy-nilly to 4, 5, 6 different agencies and say, right, off you go, find us this person. And that is just like the worst thing to do. Yeah. And the reason why that is the worst thing to do is you're not going to get a quality level of service. All you're going to get there is fastest finger first. You're going to get recruiters who scan job boards, just see who's on the database, and fire CVs over willy-nilly just to see if they can win that assignment. I know that.
I think really that actually agencies actually listening to this now will realise that it's exactly the same as their business, right? Because agencies sell on, you know, chemistry and trust and capability. You've got to have a good relationship with a client for it to be successful. Yeah. And you know, if they got a brief that was just thrown out to 6 or 7 agencies, and it, you know, it obviously, or maybe a bit more than that, it would be, you know, frowned upon. So to a certain degree. So
yeah, just like agencies, we need time to do a proper job. We need time to unearth unique hidden talent that isn't necessarily looking. And we need, you know, quality work, as you've just alluded to, takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. You can't just conjure up talent overnight. And in order to play us in the right position, give us ownership, give us accountability over that important, crucial hire. And we will put all our energy, all our resource, we will be dedicated to making that assignment our priority and make sure we get you the best talent. And therefore, the focus goes into the quality then, not into the speed of how quickly you can turn it around. And it's not just a quick scour of a database. It's a detailed and extensive search. And then you get a better candidate who's more aligned with the brief and better the match. But and yeah, again, I read about it somewhere. I can't remember where I read about it. But I align it to, if you were to go and have brain surgery, would you choose the brain surgeon who did it quickest or the brain surgeon who did the best, most comprehensive, 99.9% chance of getting that piece of surgery right? And it's exactly the same mindset. And it should be the same, obviously, with agencies when they're choosing what briefs they want to work on with a client.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting. I think, you know, definitely something I learned along the journey, which was have a more strategic partnership with your suppliers. Don't treat them as suppliers, you know, make them partners. And if you do that and you take a long-term view, I mean, most agencies should have a plan of where they're going to grow next year, if hopefully it will grow, and what roles they're going to need through the year. So, you know, they can be proactive and they can sit down with people like yourself and go, here's our recruitment schedule for next year. We're thinking it's going to be this time it comes in. At least you're then able to keep looking for them. Yeah.
And the best client relationships we've got, as you say, we know what that 12 month visibility looks like, and we're building a virtual bench of talent for them, so that when that you know Q1 March they need that individual, they know that they've got Bob, Jane, Teresa, Clive sitting waiting to come and join the business when they've got that brief. So it's about building it proactively. And yes, it takes time. And yes, there's 101 things that all agency owners have to do above and beyond, you know, having a 7 p.m. coffee with a prospective candidate. But if you want to really get ahead and make sure you're getting the right people, that's the energy we have to put in. That's exactly what I've had to do as a business owner over the 14 years that I've run a business. And, you know, it might sound ridiculous, but we also have a dedicated roster of two or three recruitment partners that we work with. I don't know, people have probably watched this going, is this guy bloody mad? Yeah, we do have to pay exorbitant recruitment fees as well. But the reason why is we are investing all our time and energy into building a network of talent on behalf of our clients. I'm not speaking to recruiters day in, day out. So when it comes to me trying to find talent, I'm literally like an agency owner. Which is why we do rely on two or three absolute tried and trusted partners who are great, who find us our next generation of talent. So it works if you do invest time, but it takes time.
Do you also talent manage individuals' careers as well? Or do you know what I mean? Like if you place someone in a role, like maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, if they wanted to move on, I mean, it's probably quite difficult because if you put them into a client, I guess. But because I remember before I set my business up, it was Harvey Nash, you know, those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one guy there and he'd say, right, I'm going to look after your career for the next 10 years. He was like, I'm going to keep you moving on. You know, do you do that kind of stuff, really? Is that an older approach?
Well, so I guess loosely we do, vicariously do, because if I've placed someone, they will invariably become a client. But then when they're looking to leave, they will obviously pick up the phone to me and say, right, lad, I'm looking for my next opportunity. So I guess over the 20 years that I've been in recruitment, I've probably placed the same person, maybe 3, 4, five times in their career. And they've not only become candidates to clients, but they've become good friends of mine also because of that amount of time. And if, you know, I'm helping them achieve their and realize their business goals. But yeah, there's nothing I love more than placing a candidate and then entrusting me with finding their team and helping build their team, because it's a real privilege that, you know, it's a massive pillar in any business, isn't it? Getting the right people around you to realize a vision that you've got. Yeah. And so, yeah, as I say, I feel really humble and privileged that people want us or want to engage with us and my business to help them grow their business.
Great. I love it. I really hope people listening to today will see a different perspective on getting the right partner to help you, you know, with your talent management, you know, rather than just looking at it as a commoditized, you know, way of finding people. I think that's the experience I got from in the end. It took me a while to learn because I was cynical, but when I looked back, Leon, at the team I had at the end of the journey, actually two things. The first thing was half the team were from recruitment agencies and half weren't. There was no real difference. Like one area didn't outshine the other. Maybe, if I'm honest, I think the recruitment did slightly tip it a little bit. Yeah, because I think two of my senior people, they had come in from recruitment. And so the second thing I was going to say on that, which has gone out of my head now, because I was thinking about the two people that I recruited for the recruitment agency. Was sometimes when I work with agencies, weirdly, maybe you know the answer to this question, I found that I just got more candidates in generally. Have you ever had that before? It's almost like sometimes candidates sort of figure out who it is, or they just start looking around. But it was like really weird. Whenever I use recruitment agency to help me or agencies, I just seem to get more, maybe just more focus, more momentum. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. Or the law of attraction, something like that, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
Serendipitous recruiting. Call it that.
You know, it happened only a couple of years. Only a couple of years ago, someone had said, "Yeah, I saw it. I saw it was advertised, and I figured out who the agency was, and I went direct because I thought they wouldn't want to pay a fee or something. Something very dodgy like that." But
fair play if that person worked out.
Yeah,
there's a level of tenacious.
Tenacious. So you've created this Future of Work report, and there's been a lot of talk recently around, you know, what's going to happen. We've run our own polls in the community, and but I'd love to get, you know, you just give us a summary of what did you, because it only came out like two. You emailed me, by the way. I hadn't replied to your email yet because I'm 2 weeks behind on email. But talk to us about the report.
So we've put together two white papers. The first white paper we put together probably about 4 or 5 months ago. And this second white paper is a lot more detailed because we've got a lot more detailed insights and a lot more research has gone into this, both on a UK and a global basis. I just do need to caveat that all the credit for doing this must go to my operations team for putting this together. I can't take any of this.
Do you steal all the glory? You just say it was all you. I won't tell.
Now, I'll name check Leanne and Kimmy if they are watching and say, the feedback, Spencer, that we've had. It's been brilliant. I'm really proud of what they've done. So we've obviously collated the key trends and concept that seem to align and resonate with the anecdotal experiences that we've been learning from all our clients. So obviously we put it all together and shared it. And as I say, we've hoped it was going to add some value and get people thinking about how they need to tweak their working arrangements, pivot, all that kind of good stuff. And yeah, there's some really good stuff.
Is there anything really surprising in there? That's something that surprised you at all? Or did it all seem like it seemed quite sensible?
Do you know what? I think I've read it and reread it and reread and reread it. And I think just different bits have jumped out at me. Just when you actually sit and reflect, for instance, burnout is a real threat. Increase that 1 in 4 adults in the UK are showing signs of burnout because of this new way of working, because we are working so many more hours We're going in, and so the lights just got off.
That's brilliant. You look like you turned to an alien as the light went out. It's brilliant.
Up and down.
At least you've got eco-friendly lighting.
Yeah, exactly. So people are sticking, you know, so people are working so hard and neglecting their personal mental health. So just little bits like that, you think, do you know what? The penny does drop because there's no... You just segue through a day, don't you, without your little meetings or without
Zoom after another.
Yeah, incidental chats at the water station and hey, how you doing? Or your little stroll at lunchtime to go and grab a butty with a colleague. It's there's loads of really good stuff. I mean, I can obviously have shared it with you.
Where do people get a copy of it? I think we are going to put it in the community, by the way. It's just literally, I've just got to get it sorted out. So if you are in the HDomics community, we'll put it in there. But otherwise, go to the website.
It's on our website. I've shared it on my LinkedIn profile as well. If anyone's a member of the Supper Club, I've shared 9 key points on their community. And I've shared a quick video with a 3-minute overview of the key points and learnings that we all might be able to learn from. So there's various different places. But yeah, hopefully I'm disseminating it far and wide so people can see it.
And what do you think, you know, the world's going to definitely change forever in some shape or form, right? Because this whole experience has accelerated so many different areas. What do you think will happen? What's your gut feeling at the moment that will happen? Let's say forward the clock to, I don't know, 12 months from now.
Yeah.
What do you think people will...
Isn't it funny? Well, before I forward the clock, let's just rewind the clock. So 12, 18 months ago, the biggest thing that people were asking for in business is flexibility, isn't it?
And all agency surveys said that 63% of staff wanted flexibility in the workplace. Yeah.
Yeah. Flexibility, working from home. And now everyone is hankering after coming back into the office because we realize how difficult it is to, you know, your where you live is your home. It's not a place where you're meant to do work. Yeah, maybe doing it every now and again, doing a bit of work. But people feed off people. We buzz off being around people. We learn vicariously off people, all that kind of good stuff. So how do I see it? I think the biggest way I see it is, yeah, very much a hybrid working solution. I've already seen a number of businesses, agencies and clients jettisoning their offices because they just don't need that massive overhead that's around there, a noose around their neck. And, you know, I've seen that there is, but we still do need that sense of community. People still need a place to go to, maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, whenever it might well be, to go and see their colleagues, to go and, you know, share, you know, to go and do a brainstorming session or to go and make that piece of work a reality. So I see sort of working collaboration hubs being very much more used. But yeah, the way we
use it. Do you think like the classic kind of WeWork businesses will now become sort of much more regional or more, you know, everyone will have a place where they could go to and work locally?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think WeWork at the top of people's agendas at the moment, are they? Because
their sort of model of having another example. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that kind of model where, as you say, it's a very much reduced overhead around a business owner's net, and yeah, let people come in and come out as they please. So. Yeah, we've been working on that basis over the last 8 months or so, and people want to come into the office because we miss our colleagues, we miss chatting, we miss, you know, I've been working from home obviously for however long, and my fiance, she's a breast cancer nurse, so she's out of the house from 7 till 5 every day, and I've literally been climbing the walls, not having any interaction. I've got 3 amazing house cats, but they sleep all day, so literally if I'm not on a Zoom call, I don't have any interaction, and yeah. She's visibly noticed that I've got a bit more loopy than I actually am. So for me, the 2 or 3 days that I've been coming, I've been jumping out of bed in the morning knowing that I'm going to go and see some colleagues and chat and see how they're doing and learn.
It's interesting you saying that because you strike me as a reasonably resilient person, right? I mean, I don't know if you are or not, but you know, I am that, you know, classic Gen X person, you know. Yeah. Where, you know, 6 days a week from 16 years old, you know, even working, you know, my first jobs were always long hours, even in the agency, it was always long hours. And so I think I built up good resilience over the years. Like there's an element of, you know, when you've done it a lot, you can cope with a lot more. Mm. And I think that, you know, so I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying, but I have good resilience. But even I've had 2 points in the last 6 months where I never struggle and I've struggled. So if I'm struggling, everybody else, and I have to say every board meeting I've gone into, there's always been one person who's struggling, you know? So yeah. It is that you're right. And I've been on this thing since 8 o'clock in the morning. Right. And it can't, how much longer could it go on for?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And as you say, yeah, you know, I think I am pretty resilient, but like you, I've had some pretty dark days. I'll be dead honest. And the way we've shared that with our colleagues, myself, a business partner, and the leadership team, to let people know it's all right to have these days, but talk to us, talk and share it. And everyone's been really open, and I've been really impressed with everyone in our business how they've dealt with and adapted with this working environment, because it's bloody hard. Another area that I think is really important is how are we going to make a remote working culture work when people and agencies, particular agencies, their USP has been their uniqueness of their culture and how they work differently and how they tick and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah, how do we nurture cultures remotely via Zooms or Teams? Yeah, there's only so many bloody quizzes we can all do without going nuts or remote wine tasting. Oh, it's great, but it's a very siloed culture, isn't it?
It's funny, isn't it? Because everyone loved the quizzes early on, and we had loads of poker games, and then it all just died off. Everyone couldn't face it anymore. But the agencies that I know that have been fully remote for long periods of time, they just have very regular team meetings in centralized locations all around the world, or you know, they'll be more creative because the money they save with offices, the money they save from the office, they can reuse that to be more creative around those. But you are right.
Yeah, a really big point, positive point that I'm looking at, we come out of this, is that whole notion of presenteeism having to change, or is changing off the back of obviously not being able to be present 9 to 5 in office. And so this mindset from all business owners really is adapting and evolving. And it's all been very much focused on outcome-based management as opposed to presenteeism management.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's great. So that is increasing focus, increasing a level of engagement, driving better results in a business. And you know what? It's driving an increased level of trust across employees and colleagues within the business, because the only way that we can judge whether we're doing a good role is, are we delivering against what we said we're going to do?
Yeah, and you're right. The trust is, I mean, most people who own and run businesses, you know, is the trust hurdle for many to overcome before about allowing flexible working. You know, there's a control thing of seeing everybody. And now everyone's gone remote and they've actually seen that it works, and actually most cases I've seen, the agencies have actually performed really well in terms of their efficiency, their delivery. Actually, I think they've got more confidence now, whereas before they couldn't see it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And trust drives loyalty as well, doesn't it? And it drives a high performance culture, which is great. And happy and engaged staff are far more productive, as you and I both know.
Yeah, it's good. So I think we can summarize by saying, whatever happens moving forwards, it's going to be a better working world probably than it was 12 months ago.
Yeah, I think it's like that fixed mindset and growth mindset, isn't it? I think we're all now evolving with the dynamics of what we're faced with. And so it's got to be, you know, we're all learning. We're all just bobbing and weaving and learning and shooting from the hip, aren't we? So it's got to be a better way of doing it.
Yeah. So, do you know what? That's been brilliant. I mean, I think we've covered so much, from talent attractions to recruitment processes to how to get the best out of a recruitment agency. Well, you don't call yourself a recruiter. What do you call yourself? What is the official title?
Well, strategic talent partner, but that might sound a little bit...
I think that's a better description.
I think it is. That embodies what we do a lot better than that. Thank you so much for... inviting me to come and chat to you, and I've not seen you in ages. I can't wait to see you and have a beer in person or two when we can. And thanks for your time today and giving me the chance to share my story and share what I'm passionate about.
One of the things that you're really good at, I'm going to share, which I'm really terrible at, is you are really good at constantly reaching out to people saying, "Hey, how are you? I'm checking in." And I'm always too busy to do that proactive stuff. But I do appreciate all of your emails and messages when you send them. It's very thoughtful, and it's a good habit to have.
Great. That means a lot. In fact, that's exactly what we were telling all the guys last week. Just keep checking in with people. Just be human, be authentic. How are you doing? And that's how you build relationships, isn't it?
It's very, very true.
Scientific, it's just about being a decent person.
Totally. And I think the world needs more of that moving forwards. So wow, thank you very much. That was I really appreciate you giving up the time to come and talk. And also, because you're a podcast host as well, are you still doing the podcast?
I've not done one in a while, actually. We're just revamping it a little bit, but I'll definitely like to get you on our new revamp podcast at some stage when I get off my backside and do it.
I was just like nervous that you were going to turn around and ask me loads of questions and it was a swap and I'm going to like be put on the spot. So anyway,
hey, listen, when it's my turn, I'll definitely get you sweating.
So it's been great speaking with you. Have a great week, and we'll get that beer in soon.
Yeah, and you, Spencer. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And that's a wrap. We're done.